Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning, 34 minutes after the hour. Text line, if we have time, we'll get a few more in. 251-343-0106. Real quick before we go to our next guest, Tony writes, Congressman Moore may be more physical conservative. Oh, I think you mean fiscal with an F. I don't know. I mean, I think they, like I said, I think the two of them vote along the same lines. It's just rhetorically, there's a different approach there. And, you know, it's things like committee selection or whatever it may be. And if Paul adds, you're a jackass, but not a dumbass. Well, thank you, Paul. I'll take that as a compliment. Joining us now on the line, my colleague at 1819 News, 1819news.com. Y'all need to check that out if you have the opportunity. Always a good read there, if I might say so myself. But Bradley Cox joins us on the line. Bradley, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Hey, thanks for having me on. Always glad to join in.
Hey, thanks for making time. Well, we're going to play pundit here, sort of, I guess, like a pundit roundtable kind of thing. And I wanted to first of all, we'll start out with AL1. I mean, where do you think that race is? I suspect it's a jump ball, but it's hard to get a read on a trend. We haven't seen a whole lot of polling, but I mean, the fact that we haven't seen a whole lot of polling makes me think that it may not be favorable one way or another.
I believe, yeah, that I mean, this is going to be a hard fought race down to the end. Both candidates, you know, have done very well. And you know, and the reason that you haven't seen a lot of polling, in my opinion, is because it is such a close race. Generally, whenever you're going to release polling, you want to have a huge margin for that. And if you don't have a huge margin and it's a very tight race, there's not really any point in releasing that and giving your opponent the opportunity to see that.
Well, and I think that's right. And I mean, because if you have a big polling number, it helps with fundraising. Like these polls, maybe the public doesn't realize it, but they're released, you know, for some reason. There's some justification. It's a strategy, right?
It is. It's completely a strategy, generally for fundraising or for votes. But whenever you as a political strategist, whenever you're looking at a poll, you're not necessarily focused on the top numbers. The poll shows you where you need to go. It tells you messaging for certain demographics within your district that you're running in, and the messaging that you need to send to that demographic. And that's generally the way you look at it from a political strategist standpoint.
So I think it's one thing I would say, though, I would have thought if there was going to be movement in this race, it would be early. Jerry Carl just out fundraised the Barry Moore side and is able to do a whole lot more with it on that front, get up on TV more, on the airwaves, and maybe do more there. But, I mean, if Barry Moore weathers that storm, and then as anticipated, the money comes in late for him, is what everybody tells me. I mean, then it really is neck and neck, right? All the way down to March 5th.
I think it's going to be neck and neck all the way down to March 5th. If you look at media buys and everything, I believe Barry started out with a slight advantage here, and the amount of media that he's bought over the past couple weeks. Last I checked, he bought about $300,000 worth of media within the past week. So basing that upon, you know, that could lead to those rumors that somebody is going to come in and put a bunch of money in this race towards the end, towards Barry. Jerry already released his fundraising numbers for last quarter. He had a great quarter for Q4. And Barry is not. We'll know. I believe we'll know a lot more tomorrow once we see the FEC reports. But I think you could see the Freedom Caucus come in at the end of this race.
And I'm a little, I mean, the PAC money on the sidelines, a little bit for Jerry. I guess we were kind of anticipating like a shadowy Club for Growth entity or something to come in for Barry Moore, but we haven't seen that yet, have we?
We haven't, and that'll be something that'll be, you know, you can see on the FEC reports. Club for Growth may not necessarily come in as Club for Growth, but what they can do is they send out, what I've seen them do in the past is they send out email fundraising campaigns to give directly to the candidate. So if you start seeing a bunch of, you go back to like when Jerry was running against Bill Hightower, you saw a bunch of donors from across the country maxing out to Bill Hightower. And that was obviously Club for Growth's people, which he openly had accepted their support. But that's one key thing that as a political strategist, you're going to be looking for is that.
Well, let's look at AL2. Now, this one is really perplexing to me. The Democrat side, I have no idea what's going to happen there. I was really kind of bullish early on Napoleon Bracey. I've kind of cooled off on him. Now, I guess I was, you know, after that one ad from Anthony Daniels, well, you know, he may not be the front runner, but he's going to make the runoff. I hear a lot about a buzz about Shamari Figures. I don't know if I buy it or not. I can't tell where that's coming from. I mean, I have no idea where that second congressional district's going to wind up on the Democrat side.
On the Democrat side, I could see it going to a runoff and definitely Anthony Daniels being in there today. The Alabama New South Alliance, which is a very, very progressive liberal organization in Alabama, announced that they have endorsed Anthony Daniels in that race. So that's going to give him support. If you look at the ad that he put out, he obviously had some money because that ad was very, very well put together. It was produced very well, and it was publicized very well. But that ad cost a lot of money in the way he did that.
Well, and, you know, we all have to joke about or joke or whatever, the Joe Reed machine and Stephen Reed not running in it. And, you know, that's been a chronic complaint of a Democrat office seekers that the Democratic Party in Alabama just doesn't do anything. And they lay the blame at Joe Reed's feet. Let me ask you this. If you're able to muster up enough cash to buy off Joe Reed to get him engaged, what is that worth? I mean, I got to think it's got to be worth something, right?
It definitely has to be worth something. He hasn't been the... He hasn't got to where he is in Alabama Democrat politics by not having, you know, some loyal support behind him. And he does bring a portion of the Democrat Party with him whenever he gets behind a candidate. Now, it's not all Democrats because, as we have all seen, the Alabama Democrat Party has been a chaos for the past couple of years because of Joe Reed. But he definitely has a nice group of people that follow him. And I believe this whole district or redistricting ordeal that the federal government has completely messed up, which made the AL1 race completely ridiculous and the AL2 race completely ridiculous. And they based it off of race, which I personally don't agree with they should do. But they were trying to make a seat that Stephen Reed could win in and he can't. So, you know, I don't know if Anthony Daniels goes and tries to get Stephen Reed in or Joe Reed in on this or not, but I definitely believe he is a front runner. And Napoleon, I think he could play a part in the race. It just depends. Again, we'll see tomorrow on FEC reports. That will tell us a lot more about the race. Well, on the Democrat side.
Yeah, it's just it's no one's really standing out right now. I mean, maybe you can make the case that Daniels is, but whenever I bring this up, it's like, no, Anthony Daniels can never win in a million years in that district. He's a carpetbagger and people know it. I don't know that that's the case. So we'll see. I have no idea what turnout in a Democratic March 5th primary is even going to be, particularly with not much on the presidential side to look at.
Yeah. Joe Biden is the nominee. The Democrats are going to make sure that he's the nominee. So turnout will definitely take play a role in this race. And, Anthony Daniels he lives in Huntsville. If I was somebody running against him, like I've said before, I would be making the argument that he abandoned that district, and it wasn't until the fact that they had something to offer him that he finally come back, and now he wants to be the Bullitt County boy.
Yeah, we'll see. I guess I thought that ad he did very early on was very good. Let's talk about the Republican side. That's the big question here. Looking at that one. Yeah. I guess Brubaker is the front runner, and we probably thought early on it would be a Brubaker All Britain contest, but Carolee Dobson really looks pretty solid to me, and you watch her on the stump, she gets a lot of applause. I kind of like having her, had her on radio a couple of times and seen her a couple of times out in public. She is like an Ann Coulter, but without the like sneering sort of condescension, and I think that does well. I don't know if she's got enough to get out and make people aware of who she is, but she's certainly coached up to where she ought to be.
Yeah, she has definitely been coached up to where she needs to be, and she's obviously a conservative. She's more conservative than I thought that she was going to be. I still believe that Brubaker is the front runner in that race. And like you said, I believe that in the beginning, we believe that it would be a Brubaker and All Britain race, with All Britain having the powerful committee positions that he sits in the Alabama legislature. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily translate to federal races, because many of these state organizations can't give to federal races, and their national components won't play in open elections. And you run into issues there as far as fundraising. And also, just from talking to people, have not heard that All Britain has been out campaigning that hard for this race. Caroline's done a very good job at trying to get around everywhere in the district, trying to take kind of a Katie Britt approach to making sure that she's seen everywhere. She is everywhere. She speaks very well. But Brubaker's going to be a tough opponent to beat. If she could force it to a runoff, then we're going to have a really tough race on our hands. But if Brubaker feels that at the end of, once we get down close to the end of the race, that he can, you know, if his polling is showing that he's close enough that he might can win, he may just throw a bunch of money of his personal money in and try to win this without a runoff.
Yeah, I don't know. Just such a crowded field. Now, Kay Ivey's pulled it off, but typically these crowded fields, that's a very hard thing to do, right, to get that 50% plus one. And we don't see that. I mean, even Martha Roby in her last race, she had a crowded field, and she still had to go into a runoff with Bobby Bright. These runoffs, I mean, these races at AL2 just look like we're just might as well buckle up for the runoff.
Runoffs are the absolute toughest part of any campaign, that if you're ever a part of one, runoffs are absolutely miserable parts of a campaign, because you're working 24/7 nonstop for those 6 weeks of the runoff, and you don't know what turnout's going to be like, and turnout is generally low in those runoffs. So it comes down to, a lot of times in these races, just how much money you can spend to get your voters out to vote.
Yeah, because like every touch, every door knock, low turnout, that retail ground level politics is so much more valuable, right? With a crowded field and a crowded primary, you can rely on kind of an air campaign and just run some ads and really get out and do radio and earn media. But I feel like in these runoffs, the better organization you have, the more you're able to get out and do the grassroots stuff, the better off you are.
In a lot of cases, that is very true, but money definitely still plays a part in that. So, but it definitely plays a much larger role in a runoff race versus just a normal primary election. Absolutely.
Well, I think you got to, it's like you said, you got to do probably a little bit of both ideally, but you can't neglect, like, because like if this is decided by a few hundred votes, you're sitting there the day after the primary runoff. If I'd only just, you know, put in that extra day or whatever, I might have had a different outcome. It's what it feels like a lot of times to me, that the candidate with, maybe something even just a ground game, but that is, it's more valuable than it would be in just a regular primary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. If you lose by, whenever you have a good ground game put together, you're looking at 1 to 2 points that you're going to be able to really mess with that race, generally looking at it. And generally that's where you see paid door knockers come in, because you're not ever going to be able to get enough volunteers. And volunteers want to go knock where they're comfortable knocking at doors and stuff. You generally have to bring in a group and just pay door knockers, because there is a process to how you do that and how you strategically knock on the doors that you need to.
Bradley, we're out of time. Folks want to find you online. How can they do so?
You can find me on Twitter at Bradley Cox AL, and then 1819 News. Read my stories. Generally get out 2, maybe 3 a day. So find me there.
All right, Bradley, thanks for making time for us.
Absolutely. Thanks.
All right, we got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, yes, we are beer drinkers. Yes, we are hill raisers.